Hi, thanks for joining us. This is Carlos Castellanos for Drawn by Success, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Mr. Bob Ostrom. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing great, Carlos. How's everybody doing out there?
I'm doing fantastic. We're kind of surviving a slight storm right about now.
Yeah?
Well, we live in Florida, okay. So that's expected.
Well, we'll hold our breath and make sure that you don't get struck by lightning, Carlos.
Well, you know.
You got the headset on. It'd be perfect.
Tether me to a post so you don't lose me.
There you go. Well, we have a guest with us today, Carlos.
Yes, we do. We have Mr. Owen Garrett, the pencil neck. Owen, if you're not familiar with his work, is a highly regarded best-selling artist. And I think he's sold his work to over like 1,500 corporations or something like that,
wow.
Like in Canada and U.S. Clients you may have heard of are like BMW, Cargill, Remax, Cummins, CNR, Hertz, GE Capital. He does a lot of graphite and black and white art, and my understanding that the reason behind this is because he's somewhat colorblind, but we're going to find out directly from the man himself. Owen Garrett, are you on the line, sir?
You bet.
How are you, Owen?
Doing great, doing great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic.
Doing great,
man.
Thanks, Owen.
So tell us, how did you get started as an artist? You know, did you start drawing out of the womb like most artists' stories, or what's the deal?
Pretty much. I was one of the class artists. You know, when you get to grade 3 and 4, there seems to be 3 or 4 in every class that end up arguing over who's going to draw the picture of Santa Claus on the chalkboard for Christmas and that kind of thing. And I was one of them. I was one of the bigger kids, so I got ahead more on more from moxie than talent at that stage, certainly.
So you bullied your way right to the front line. That's awesome.
Oh, there's no two ways about it, of course.
Yeah, that's a little unusual for an artist story, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well,
most artists don't bully their way to the chalkboard.
Well, I'm an only child, and my dad was an only child, and, you know, so my parents divorced young, so I didn't know you couldn't do things like that. See it, do it, you know. And
sure.
Funny that karma's coming back to get me, because my youngest is, it's like I've been cloned. So, but anyway, I got into high school, and I didn't quit drawing. I just never got around to it. You know, I got into sports, and I got into music especially. The bug got me. And I actually got a performance degree in music and spent my early 20s as a full-time musician. I'm a drummer. I played all over North America and places you don't want to go with bands you wouldn't want to hear. But when I was, 27, I guess, my grandma was in a nursing home. And it was Christmas time. I'm like, what do you get her? More of those little jellies or something? I don't know. And somebody said, why don't you draw her a picture? And so I did. And I made prints of it. And long story short, somebody saw one and said, would you sell me one? And I'm thinking, you're kidding. I mean, sure. And he says, what do you want for it? And I said, I don't know, make me an offer. And I'm thinking, like, you know, 25, 30 bucks would be great. And he said, I'll give you $500 for it.
Wow.
And I said, okay. And that was, you know, sort of the short version. And I, you know, by that time I'd gotten off the road, and in a weird serendipitous way, had started selling artwork for a company, and I was their number one salesman. And it just sort of like, well, huh, I can sell my art, and I'm selling other guys' art already. It wasn't too big of a jump there. And so I quit and essentially became a full-time artist. And the very first thing I drew, I sold 900 prints of it. And as the old joke says, you know, which is amazing, because those first drawings were so bad they nearly hung themselves. But I'm pumped.
That's good.
So you have a sales background.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm fundamentally unemployable, and I, you know, my quote education is in music, so I needed to do something that, you know, you didn't need any education. You know, I didn't have a degree, a percussion degree, big deal. That'll get you far. I needed something that I could, you know, go to work today and get paid tomorrow. And that was, as it turned out, the best thing that could have happened. And that a lot of that's because of the people that I met along the way. And I was very, very lucky that two gentlemen in particular, one was the old-time sales guys. And I hated sales. I mean, I always thought, you know, the back slapping, you know, toothpick stuck in the corner of his mouth, instant best friend kind of salesmanship. I thought, this is terrible. I don't want to do this. But I realized, and I was lucky enough that Puba, he was an old World Book Encyclopedia salesman, if you can imagine.
So I was a door-to-door guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's
and,
a
oh, no kidding. But he was, by far, he was like the best. And it wasn't that he pinned everybody to the mat to sell him. It wasn't that at all. And he sat me down and he told me, look, people love to buy, but they hate to be sold. And he said, Owen, you're a nice guy. So, you know, use that. You befriend people quickly. And all kinds of sales resistance goes down and they will actually listen to you with an open mind. And I went, huh? And he was right. And so in a weird kind of way, the best salesmanship lesson I ever had was don't sell anything. Just make it easy for them to buy. And that has served me so well. Even before, like I say, I got into, you know, went full circle and came back to being an artist. That's absolutely true. And it's got nothing to do with flim-flamming people or fast talking. It's none of that. It's more about being genuine than anything else.
That's great, because a lot of artists have problems with being able to market and sell their work.
Oh, sure.
You know, they even hate talking about it to an extent, because they feel like they're pushing it on people, or because they're bothering, you know, people or something, and or like people may not be interested or something.
Sure.
And I think that's more of an issue, you know, internally than it is anything that's going on outside.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how did you get past that? I mean, you know, in regards to selling your own work?
Well, a lot of it was desperation on my part, to be quite honest. It's easy to, for the first 8 years of my career, And I know people are, you know, are kind of astounded at this when they consider it. But for the first 8 years of my career, I made my living selling art door to door. And I would load up, you know, a bunch of prints in the back, and I would go into an industrial area, and I would walk in the front door and say, "Hi, you don't know me, but," and that's how I made my living. And I got so good at it before I burnt out. It's one of those, you know, I really ironic things in my career was the better I got at it, the less I wanted to do it. but it was to the point where I had honed my message and I had honed my craft and I understood the people I was speaking to so well that if I walked into an office and the real decision maker was there and I could get my artwork in his hands where he was actually holding it, 7 out of 8 took something, usually a dozen pieces at once.
Wow.
And that's thousands of dollars. And so and that kind of thing, like artists hear that and they think, you know, that I must be pulling something, you know, there's got to be what I don't know, there's no magic beans. It's understood my market and I understood how what I did could benefit them. And the only salesmanship, excuse me, was just getting their attention for a couple minutes in a respectful way and in a playful way, not in a pushing, shoving. Absolutely not. I can honestly say that I never had to quote unquote close anybody ever in my whole career, and that was amazing. And you know, when you mentioned other artists don't like to. The whole idea of selling, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of artists are on some level kind of offended that they should even have to consider it. You know, my art should sell itself. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. You have that adage, you know, my artwork speaks for itself or whatever. So they kind of just rely on that.
That's an amazing story. How did you find the marketplace for that? I mean, did you just walk in anywhere? Did you say, well, these are people who I think might buy it? Or, I mean, how did you identify with the people who were going to buy your art?
Blind geographic luck had a lot to do with it, quite frankly. And it wasn't, I know, like, in hearing the story and the way, you know, it's been, you know, told over the years, it makes me sound like some kind of genius. And it really, it's not. It's, quite frankly, most of it had to do with the people I was selling to asking me over and over and over for certain things and finally penetrating the mental cement to go, huh, maybe I should start doing some oil rig stuff. I mean, I live in Alberta. Mm-hmm. I hear some tribute, Alberta, Canada, some tribute. If Alberta was an independent nation, we would have the largest oil reserves in the world outside of Saudi Arabia. And nobody seems to know that. Mm. So, and there's a big history of that here. And I grew up in Saskatchewan. That's the province next door. We're right above Montana. Saskatchewan is one over to the east. And it's heavy into oil and farming. So, I mean, that subject matter resonates with a lot of people. I started in wildlife art. It was, you know, the mid-90s. Everybody was painting wolves, it seemed. And I went, I don't know, I guess I'll do that too. I had no business doing it, but that's, you know. And I went in, and what I realized was that, and here's like a big writer downer for artists, if they're hearing this. And this will offend some of them, and it offends me at some level too, but I mean, there's the way it should be, and then there's the way it is. And the way it is that it is infinitely easier for me to sell someone some artwork as a gift than it is to sell someone for themselves. And here's an example. So if we're at a trade show or an art show or whatever, I mean, you don't think I come running home with a piece of artwork and go, hey, honey, look what I got. You know, that's, I mean, it's not done. She takes umbrage. She wants to be the one hanging stuff on the wall. I have like this one room I'm in now. It's the only room in the house that I have any control over. So trying to sell, right? So trying to sell me something.
Would that be the doghouse?
Well, yeah, not bad.
Because that's my room usually.
Yeah, I got a flea collar around here somewhere. You know, so trying to sell me, I mean, never mind that I'm an artist, but, you know, as a typical fella, you know, trying to engage me in the process of buying a work of art is kind of futile, really, because I'm not the decision maker in that regard. That's at best a collaborative effort, but not usually. It's usually the, you know, usually it's the wife in most homes, of course. Well, but if you approach me and it's all pre-framed and everything that, you know, my buddy's got a wedding, you know, coming up, and he likes whatever the subject matter is. Your odds of me buying something from you to give away has gone up exponentially, right? Because and typical sales training, which is, I mean, I'm sorry, it's a joke. No disrespect, Zig Ziglar, but but all the stuff that traditional sales training would have you do about, you know, can you imagine this over your fireplace? And would you be, you know, trial closes, like, would you be prepared to take this home today? If all that stuff, it's ridiculous. But if you pre-frame it in a way that benefits them. So in the corporate world, I realize that in certainly in our corner of the world, and well, and as it turns out, I've discovered like all over North America, companies spend piles of money on golf shirts and jackets and tote bags and cooler bags and all that, you know, junky crap with a logo on it, and they spend thousands, you know, and it's one of those, if a company is doing business with you and they're doing millions of dollars of business and they're having a golf tournament and they ask you for something to donate for the golf tournament, for instance, well, if they're doing millions in business, you're not going to give them like a calendar and a hat, right? So they're already have a budget for this. So I was fortunate early on that I realized what my better clients were doing with them. You know, you want how many? What are you going to do with them? Oh, we're going to use these as golf tournament prizes. Now, that's a terrific idea. Why didn't I think of that? So, I mean, you don't have to be the one that comes up with the idea. You just kind of got to be open when one lays down in front of you. You know, be sure you trip on that. You know, pick it up. And that's what I did. So I've started very early on marketing, you know, instead of trying to engage them to hang it in their office, which does happen, but I mean, it's, you know, you're giving away those big leather jackets, and everyone's got how many leather jackets and golf shirts and all the other stuff, which, and that's big bucks, that stuff. Well, I was able to structure my business to sell framed limited edition prints of mine when we do custom plaques and everything, competitively priced. And it was something new, something different. Hey, this is great. I've got a series of old time oil and gas art that spoke to their industry. I mean, once I'd honed the message and was able to resonate with, like, I understand these people. My dad worked on the rigs. I mean, I speak the language. And that's 99% of it. I could have been a lot more mediocre of an artist and still done well because I'd found an audience.
So your audience you found because you took the time to look around you and see what was available.
I mean it was here. I've since, you know, broadened out into all kinds of little corners and niches and different things. Because it's once you've done it once and you know you can do it, it's just a matter of keeping. There's millions of them, and it doesn't. Wherever you are, there's something that you can connect to.
Yeah, you know, and that's the point I wanted to try to make is that, you know, because a lot of artists are always kind of looking at, I guess, you know, what they could be doing or how someone else did something, a particular market to pursue or what have you. But in most cases, I find that, you know, they're just. They approach their art and the marketing of their art somewhat with blinders on. Mm-hmm. And very often when I talk to coaching clients that I coach, usually the answer is really quite close to them. They just don't see it. Mm-hmm. As far as an opportunity, whether it be a market that's open to them or a hobby that they have that they don't even think of tying into their art. You know what I mean? So usually sure. It's a lot closer than they think.
Yeah, and I think people, it's got to do with creativity as a whole. I mean, people think that because we're artists, somehow we've been, you know, got the wizard kiss or something. You know, we've been blessed somehow that, you know, we have abilities and things that other people don't. And I don't believe that for a second. I really don't. Sure, there's aptitudes, just like some people are a little better at math than others, you know, that kind of thing. But that's certainly not enough. And again, there will be people disagree with me, and that's fine. But I contend that creativity is nothing more and nothing less than the ability to solve a problem. That's it. Because there is no, people think that as an artist we make it out of whole cloth, as it were, that, you know, you just sort of wake up in the morning and bam, there's some artwork happens. And no. That's not how it works at all. It can, very rarely, but by golly, who wants to sit around waiting for that? Because there is nothing out of hold. There's nothing new. It's everything is, and I got this from Thomas Keller. And he said, everything is either an inspiration or an evolution. And I've never found an exception to this, except for the odd complete accident. So it's not that, as an artist, we're you know, got something that other people don't got. But artists have to kind of realize that what we do is synthesize. We synthesize stories and experiences, and that's our job, is to communicate that. That is my contention. Well, it's the exact same, okay? So if creativity is the ability to solve a problem, if the problem is I don't have a market, well, it has always astounded me that more artists don't apply their creativity to their careers that they would apply to their artwork. It's the same process. And you're right, it's always right there. it wasn't my case. I didn't see it for years until finally it's like, hey, dummy, you know, do some oil rig stuff. Oh, okay. And wherever you are, there is something. I mean, there was a lady from Mississippi, lived in, I think it was Mobile, and we did a little bit of coaching, and she was really good at seascapes, watercolor seascapes, and they were nice. But the problem with, she had the problem that's very common, and I'm sure you've seen this, where an artist will get hung up on technique, and then their expression is just technique. So it becomes the Bob Ross thing. Pump, 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 there's a tree. You know, there's the lake, there's the mountain, there's, and it just becomes a matter of mixing those things up again as a series of techniques. And she'd kind of fallen into that trap because she really liked painting water, and she was quite good at it. But, you know, it comes to, yeah, so you and everybody else. And she realized that was a problem, and she was asking, what can I do? And to me, it was very easy because, you know, maybe it's, you step back and you can see, you know, the forest and the trees, whole thing. And I said, well, you're like in the shrimp capital of the world, aren't you? And she says, yeah, there's a lot of that. And I said, you know, and what about luxury yachts? There's lots there, is there not? And she says, yeah. This was before Katrina. And I said, well, if someone pays, I don't know, $10 or $15 million for a yacht, is it that much of a stretch to think they'd pay $5,000 or $10,000 for a real nice portrait of their yacht in a seascape? And when I said that to her, to me, it was just common sense. I mean, that's taking something she's good at and has an affinity with and likes to do, and just taking that half a sideways step into, you know, and from then it was just a matter of, well, that is a storm.
You always heard it, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't lying.
It was,
man.
Yeah. It was just a matter
life
of
raft.
Start bailing. It was from there. It was just a matter of, then her questions became more pragmatic. Okay, well, now how do I reach these people? How do I get in front of them? And she's doing very, very well with this. And it was, but it was, you know, it wasn't any big deal. It's just, you know, sometimes you need a little coaxing one way or another, you know.
So how did she approach, I mean, someone like that, how did they approach, because I was going to ask you about how you approach and find your market within your area. How did she go about locating the people that were interested in possibly being?
What she did in her case was she did essentially what I did. And there's, you know, there's the online way of figuring things out, and that's like everything kind of boils down to keyword research, right? What are people looking for? Well, yeah, but, okay, and I can come back to that, but I contend that there is no better method of doing business than meeting the people. And that's where she started, going to boat shows, first as just an attendee and introducing herself and handing out cards. Then she, you know, started with booths and experimenting that way, and just meeting the people that have the boats, or meeting people that sell the boats or fix the boats, or it's all boats. I mean, the world is all spiderwebbed. It was before the internet. Everybody's the whole 6 degrees of separation thing. And that's where she started, was doing up a just a one page real nice little sheet and a business card. Hi, this is what I do, having a 30-second elevator speech, and collecting information, just and then doing, you know, building her list that way, and just starting. And it was interesting, she was really astounded at how open and friendly people were. She had never, as an artist, had that experience. You know, it was always like when you're doing an art show and people walk by and they're looking at your booth, and if you say hello, they flinch and run away, you know. It wasn't like that, because she was talking to them in their language about stuff that resonated to them. And I think that's the single biggest mistake that artists make, is they think, not all, of course, but far too many think that the art is about them. and it's not. It's about their clients, and there's the whole. We've all seen the moody, temperamental artist who is, you know, their whole vibe is angst, and they splash around some paint, you know, and that's all about shock value instead of about connection. And it's all, look at me, look what I did. And, you know, the whole world goes, yeah, so. And so they have to turn up the shock value for attention. But, you know, I contend as an artist, we're supposed to synthesize experiences and communicate that. Because when art clicks with somebody, it clicks. And what it does is it triggers a recognition in them. Even if it's like, you know, completely non-representational, abstract, whatever it is, it resonates, it clicks, usually triggering some kind of a memory or recognition. And that's when the engagement happens, and that's where it starts. The kind of work that I do in pencil is, you know, that's easier because, oh, look, it's a guy on a golf course. You know, I mean, you can tell what it is. You can tell if you like it. People that are, you know, into more abstract things, they've got a, you know, a tougher row to hoe, as the saying goes. But that connection with people is, at least I contend, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
So, Owen, you know, Bob and I had been talking about, you know, what we do. Bob mm-hmm. and I, for example, I mean, there's a gazillion guys that, you know, could physically do what we do. And in regards to competition and other people doing the same kind of work, I mean, there's obviously a lot of other people out there that do graphite realistic drawings as well. Mm-hmm. How do you set yourself apart from everyone else that's doing it? I mean, obviously you alluded to the fact that your art speaks to a certain segment of the population, a certain market, mm-hmm. and it strikes a chord with them, which is I think is an important step in getting that resolved. But what else? How else do you set yourself apart from other people that might be doing the same thing?
Sure. Well, and that's kind of that's the big question. Okay. So again, I was very fortunate early on to hear a quote by Leroy Neiman, and it offended me as an artist, but you recognize truth when you hear it. And Leroy Neiman said, "The artist is more important than the artwork." And he's absolutely right. And if you think about it, so let's take a hypothetical example here. Well, so for instance, okay, say you buy a painting and you run home with it and you go to Wilson over the back fence and say, "Hey, I just got a new painting." Wilson never asks a painting of what.
That's very ominous.
I'm still here, guys. I'm still here.
Okay.
It just check back in every now and then. Just, you know.
Just drop into the story. That's good.
Yeah. Wilson always asks, "Who's the painting by?" See the difference? Because it doesn't matter if it was a timber wolf or a supernova or some naked chick with a sword or whatever. The first question is, "Who's it by?" And that's kind of the way it is. So, and for a lot of, you know, graphic artists, it's tough because, especially with the internet, it's commoditized what they do to a certain extent. So, you know, like the whole 99 Designs thing. I think it's a terrible idea for artists. And here's why. Okay, so you get a, there's a guy puts on a job, he wants, I don't know, a logo and maybe some letterhead and business card kind of thing. Okay, well, even if that's your thing, you go through all the work, you put it up, and you've got like a 1 in 200 chance of being the one that gets picked. So you're doing work for nothing, and it's great for business people to get free logos, but it commoditizes everything. You're just another guy doing stuff. Now, sure, there are times in that artists, you know, there are reasons to do it outside of the immediate cash flow sale. You know, you're looking for long-term clients, and you know, that part I understand. But if the artist is more important than the artwork, if that premise is true, and it just is, you have a responsibility to make yourself worthy of water cooler conversation. Okay, well, what does that mean? That means there's a bit of behavioral psychology in sales that says that you have to justify what you do. Okay, even serial killers, you know, can justify what they do in their minds. Okay, well, that covers all of humanity. You just can't act in a way inconsistent with some way that you can explain, not if you're sane. Well, what happens is art is one of those things. It's like a new car. There's an inherent brag about thing. I got a new painting, even if it's just a little something, you know. They want to inherent in the purchase is the bragging rights, even if it's just, hey hon, look what I got, you know, just something you take home. It can be that simple. Well, just like Wilson over the fence asked, who's it by? Inherent in that purchase, I believe that the artist has a responsibility of having a little bit of something about themselves that their customers can talk about. Doesn't have to be, you know, I go around, I'm a, you know, plugging volcanoes and stopping earthquakes and, you know, that kind of, no. It doesn't have to be. It can be a sentence or two. But every artist has to come up with something that is interesting enough about them that that their customers can chit chat about. That's so important.
Yeah, you know, I've had the experience where I've looked at a piece of art and haven't been like overly impressed. But all of a sudden, if there's I hear the artist's story of how they started, or you know what their background is and how they came to develop that piece of art or something, and all of a sudden it intrigues me. All of a sudden that art takes on a whole new life for me, and all of a sudden I get it, and it's like, you know, it becomes, there's just more to it, and sure, it builds more of a connection. So I think that's what you're talking about is, you know, as an artist, you have to, you know, to build value into what you're doing. It can't just be the technique and the materials involved. It's got to be more of the experience, you know, that people will get either buying that piece of, whether it's fine art or even commercial work, the experience and the story that you bring to the table that will make people want to be, you know, part of your world.
Sure. Have you ever read a book that you really liked that you didn't want to learn about the author? Or have you ever heard a song? It's like the first thing's like, who is that? It's part of the deal, and it has to be. Otherwise, it's just, you know, in the music metaphor, it's muzak, right? It's what they pipe into elevators. What makes great music a lot of the time is a great band. Okay, so an example I like to use is, what if Satisfaction was recorded by Herman's Hermits? You could say that it's essentially the same product. It's, you know, these are the chords and this is the words and this is the progression, and you know, well, it wouldn't be the same thing. Herman's Hermits is not the Rolling Stones. It's the same. It's not just something unique to artists. It's any creative endeavor. The creator has got to be part of that. And storytelling is everything. Not just you, but I encourage all artists to come up with a little bit of story for the piece they're working on. And it doesn't have to be some big overblown gas bag kind of thing. You know, it can be, I mean, anybody's been in a show, people are, you'll recognize this, but people are always asking, what does this mean? What were you doing when you painted this? What was the inspiration? All those things. And far too many artists go, it's just a painting. Wrong answer. And there's stuff in my portfolio that I pour over and agonize more over the story than the artwork to make sure that it's something you know, it does half the time the story isn't even about the painting. It's just a vibe to reinforce the vibe of the painting is quite often the way it goes. But yeah, if you're going to create something, you create a little story with it, like a sentence or two at least. It doesn't have to be an hour long thing, but you need it. Story's everything.
So I guess, you know, artists need to understand that there's more involved in purchasing the services or the art that they provide beyond just price. Because, I mean, that's usually how, you know, most of them equate the value to their work. It's like, oh, you know, a client can't afford this or they didn't have the money for this. There's a lot of different levels at which point people make a buying decision beyond just price alone.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that was the first part of the Owen Garrett interview. Bob, what do you have to say? What do you think?
I think that was great, Carlos. I can't wait to share that with our listeners. Owen has a tremendous amount of valuable information. So we're going to cut this one here because it's a little long, and I think we went, what, about an hour and 20. So what we'll do is we'll post the second part of this interview next week on Friday.
Excellent. And you know what? This interview was so jam-packed with information, I feel, that yeah. I think in this first part alone, if you just kind of sit back, listen to it, maybe listen to it again, and kind of incorporate things that might be new or new things that you find out, try to figure out ways to incorporate them into your business and take it as a little breather before you get into the second part to kind of implement a couple of things that you heard.
That's a good point. Yeah. So maybe you might want to get out a notebook or something and write down a few of these ideas because he's got some good stuff in there.
Yeah. And then there's a lot more great information to come in the second part of this. I guarantee you. And you're definitely going to want to, you know, write down notes on that part. But implementation and taking action on this stuff is the key. I understand a lot of you guys like listening to stuff while you're working. But take the time to listen to it again when you have when you don't have anything else on your table and figure out how you're going to work this into your business.
Right. And speaking of implementation, don't forget to tell your friends to come by and check it out too.
Yeah, man. Spread the word. Spread
how
the
was that for a little
success
sales
word. That was awesome. That was
thanks,
incredible.
Man. See, I just kind of spun that in there.
You did. You're like the shaman. What is it? Shwam? Sham? Sham? Shampow? Or?
Shamwow.
Shamwow. Shamwow guy. You can tell I don't watch a lot of,
Yeah, you do.
All right, guys. Till the next time.
So, enjoy. See you next time. Thanks for joining us on Drawn by Success.
Bye.